welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I am Gary Butterfield.
And this week we are going to do Risk of Rain and Horse Master.
The Game of Horse Mastery.
The Game of Horse Mastery.
Risk of Rain, The Game of Horse Mastery, and Horse Master, The Game of Horse Mastery.
So we're going to have a little bit of spoilery stuff to talk about at the end, for Horse Master at the end. So let's go to Risk of Rain first.
Indeed. What's it about?
So Risk of Rain, it is a action platformer with heavy roguelike elements and heavily co-op focused. It is made by a developer from Seattle who called themselves Hopu and was published by Chucklefish, the guys who I believe have done Terraria and Starbound. So
indeed. Yeah. Another Kickstarter game.
Yeah.
Back in May of last year. So coming up on a year of Risk of Rain.
And Gary, what do you like about Risk of Rain?
I like Risk of Rain because it does some, it has like the elements of roguelikes that I like. So it has that Paranautical Activity Isaac thing of not knowing what your loadout is going to be at the beginning. But the probably I think the most clever, so it does some new things with it too. It's not like just a side scroller mixed with a roguelike or mixed with Isaac. The kind of two big mechanics that I really love is the idea that the longer you play, the harder it gets, based on time rather than location. So you're constantly making a trade-off decision of, do I try to fully explore this level to get all the power-ups involved, or do I hurry up to get a little bit further, knowing that the longer you spend this level, the more likely the difficulty is to level up.
Yep.
Which is something that, like, you know, traditional, like you're playing a roguelike, because the treasures are randomized, you know, kind of best practices is to explore the early floors fully, because that's when the pressure is off. Here, it kind of turns that on its head. The pressure is always on.
Yeah.
You know, you can never just kind of rest on your laurels. The second bit being, I love the endings of the levels where it's kind of based in this, you know, intense, it's not like a tower, you know, there's no defense, but kind of defense scenario. Like you're not, there's no, architecture to hide yourself. It's not a defense-based thing, but you have to hold out against waves of enemies at the end. And that's really fun, too. Like, you have to activate this thing. Again, it's a risk-reward thing where, like, maybe you're not in best shape for this, but the longer I wait, the harder it's going to get because every enemy that spawns, I'm going to have to kill.
Yeah, and on top of it increasing with time, the entire time before you hit the teleporter, enemies will spawn infinitely.
Mm-hmm.
So you will just be walking around the map and they'll keep spawning on you. As soon as you hit that teleporter, you have 90 seconds of a boss spawning and just wave after wave of enemy, but then that's it.
Well,
after
the enemies that have previously spawned, you have to kill.
You do, like, you have to clear the level. Everyone you have to clear all of them to finish the level. But after you've completed the 90 seconds after hitting the teleporter, you kind of have, you know, free reign of the place, except for that meter that is constantly going with time. That's going to be increasing the difficulty once you get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of dilly-dallying around and trying to spend all your money or what have you is going to be a big risk once you come into the next level.
Yes. Risky reign.
Risky
rain. The those two things make it really compelling to me. And the fact that it is, I can't really imagine playing it single player. Like, it is a co-op game, and it supports more than two players. It supports four, is that correct?
Yeah.
I haven't played a four-player. I've only played a two-player, which is plenty fun. But four-player, I could see it just being very, you know, you have different classes that can fill different roles, similar to a Team Fortress or what have you, that you have to unlock. And just kind of, you know, creating like a Left 4 Dead kind of feel to it, where it's like, okay, we have to defend against these waves. I'm going to be, like, there's a sniper character that, like, the longer it stands still, the more damage it does. There's a character that can spread, like, creep, like toxic creep. You know, so you can kind of, you know, block off one side of the area you're in. Like, there's a lot of tactical kind of considerations that's unusual for a game that, in the moment-to-moment, plays a little twitchier.
And those considerations can manage to come out a lot better in larger games, too. Because, like, trying to play the sniper or something in a single-player game would be absolutely disastrous.
Yeah, that's nuts.
But if once you have, you know, someone who's playing the big tanky character with you, or, you know, a spread of different classes that kind of balance it out so that the sniper can get its space and make its shots, and the big heavy guy can get in there and lay his shield down and tank the enemies for you, it's really impressive. Like, it did a lot with, you know, not a whole lot of money and kind of a fairly basic set of ideas.
Yeah, the classes intersect in a really interesting way. You know, and also the items do too. Again, like as a theme between last episode and this one, like the item interactions and the way that kind of combos you can come up with is, you know, a big part of the fun.
Yeah, I haven't gotten everything yet, but I'm kind of really looking forward to some future patches that I hope add some more items to it. Because there's certainly a decent big spread right now, but the rare stuff doesn't pop up as much, so you end up kind of with a more limited spread of items that you'll get most of the time.
Yeah. It's in Isaac, the toothpix syndrome, where it's like for a little while, or Jesus juice, where like every run you get Jesus juice, every run you get toothpix for a little while, and they just had to fix it.
Every run you're going to get the banner, every run you're going to get the egg, every run. Yeah. Like, it's the same thing. You're gonna, in this game, for the first, for right now at least, it seems that the items are a little bit too limited to the point where you'll run across a couple of them a lot.
Let's talk a moment, or tell me a little bit about like what the kind of things that differentiate the characters, specifically the different verbs that are available to you, because I like that a lot. Like, out of the box before you get items.
Yeah, sure. So every enemy has every class has a primary attack that if you're playing on a 360 controller, which I highly recommend, it's going to be on your right trigger button is your primary attack, and that's the only one that doesn't have a cooldown between attacks. Then you have three others that are going to be on your other trigger and your two shoulder buttons on a 360 controller, and each of those is all four of those are going to be unique to each class. They all have different properties for each class. But the other three, besides your primary, all have cooldowns between uses. And so the most basic guy, he kind of has, you know, just a gun that shoots bullets. And he has, it'll hit one target enemy with his primary attack. He has another attack that is very similar, but he has a cooldown that will go through enemies and penetrate and hit multiple and push them back a little bit more than your regular shot would. And then he has a roll that'll help him dodge stuff. And I don't actually remember what shotgun. His... Yeah. So it's a spread attack that'll hit enemies on either side of you, I think. Yeah, he'll shoot both sides if you have enemies on either side of you.
And the one of the rolls... So he has that roll dodge thing, but I think that all the characters generally have an evasion or defense.
Yeah, they usually skill. Have some defense or movement skill.
And they're different. Like the one that when I was playing with my buddy Derek, he had unlocked more characters than I did, and he played the cowboy, and his evasion skill is to go invisible.
Yeah.
For a time, which is really interesting.
What's neat about that one, too, is when you come out of it, it stuns the enemies, so you can kind of use that tactically to get some enemies to stay in place while you're hammering them down with bullets. The second class that just about everyone will unlock, I forget the criteria are, but pretty much I think everybody I've played with has unlocked this character second, is this big tanky guy with a shield that he can set down, but it slows his movement incredibly and makes him only face one direction. You can't turn around without lifting his shield back up, which then adds a cooldown before he can use it again. Mm-hmm. But for that entire time his shield's down, he can't be hit from that side.
Yep. So that obviously helps with the boss encounters and the kind of defense sections. Very neat. Like, I would love to play this, like, you know, like I could see getting into watching competitive Risk of Rain, watching people do, you know, really master these specific roles and do really high level play is something I can't believe I haven't already like looked up on YouTube.
Yeah. In the same way that like people who are really good at Isaac are fun to watch. Like, I want to see people just doing speed runs and stuff of trying to complete this game as fast as possible with all the random elements thrown in the middle that can skew you one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's real pretty, too. Like, the game, you know, the different planets you end up on, you know, you're on different kind of planets, and it looks a little bit like, what does it look like?
Like it kind of looks like Starbound or Terraria, actually.
A little bit, but you're smaller. Like, I thought it looked a little bit, like, the individual pixel style almost looked a little bit like Swords and Sorcery.
Yeah.
Like it's a smaller character than that, but the kind of the depth of field kind of thing, and they're real pretty, like the color palettes on these planets and stuff. It's very striking.
They do a lot with their like low resolution, low pixel count art style that they've gone with.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So that's Risk of Rain.
Yeah, I think that about covers it.
Again, play it. You probably already have it. It's in that bundle that has Paranautical Activity. So we're just going to assume that you have all the games that we talk about because everyone has every game because of bundles and Steam sales. So
And if not, I know after this episode comes out, there will have been a sale about 2 weeks prior, because that's when there's a sale right now of this game. So yep. If you didn't pick it up in that sale, shame on you and get in the next one.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, there's a President's Day sale or something like that.
Yeah.
It is kind of true that like the summer, the 4th of July summer sale is the next big one. Do they really go like through 5 months without a big sale on Steam?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised. That seems nutty.
They pretty much just do the two huge ones every year, and then like there's always one something on sale and little minor sales. Oh no, wait, they did a Halloween sale.
Yeah, Halloween's too big. Christmas is big.
There's gotta be something summer else. Sale.
Yeah, there's gotta be a spring one.
Easter.
Yeah, exactly. Like something like that.
Yeah.
Easter's such a weird holiday. Do you think we'll see the demise of it in our lifetime?
I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
I don't really like buying games in the name of Jesus' resurrection, personally. It doesn't seem right.
Or eggs or rabbits.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, I will eat both those things, but I don't need to associate them with anything else. Yeah, just what a weird holiday. I never hear about Easter. Like, when you're no longer a kid, like Easter, or you don't have kids, Easter ceases to, you know, you don't go to church. Like, it's not even a thing.
It's always on a Sunday, too, which means we don't even get off work, so.
Yeah. I'll just spend it like I spend every Sunday, you know? Yeah. So
let's move on to a super indie game, as I mentioned in the last episode, not very well known and by one person alone. That game is Horsemaster.
Horsemaster, the game of horse mastery, by Tom McHenry, who is an individual guy. He publishes a paper in Chicago called The Proof, which is a really cool comic paper. Mm-hmm. I think in Chicago, he is a funny dude on Twitter.
Yeah.
And this game came to my attention. I don't actually know him, and my girlfriend doesn't know him, but my girlfriend's friends all got into it. And she played it, and she's not a huge gamer, but played it and told me I really need to play it. And I did, and I did not look back, because it's a very cool cross between like a Twine text adventure and like a Tamagotchi thing.
Which it is written in Twine, by the way.
Yep.
But yeah, it kind of adds this raising of quote unquote horses to it that adds a level of gaminess that isn't in most text adventures.
Yeah, it's not, and we're really underselling it. Like, it's not, it's really strange. Like, the writing is the big draw here. It's really well written. It's really funny. It's really tragic. You know, it really it's a kind of runs the gamut of things to make you feel while playing a game, and. Mechanically, there's not so much to it, and there are a lot of like little clever nods,
right,
to what the mechanics of that are going to be. So it's, in a way, it's very self-aware. Like, it's not one of this spate of games about games, but there's a little bit of that in it.
So I think you know, we can talk a little bit about the main pull of the story, which is that this game takes place in sort of a dystopian future setting. But most of that isn't kind of, you know, that's not blatantly drawn out for you. It's just sort of the emotions and situations that the story takes place in lead you to believe that. But you're a guy who has spent every last dime on buying an infant horse. Mm-hmm. But horses are not as horses are in our current day and age.
And horse raising is not what it is in our current day and age. Like, and nothing is what it seems. So, and essentially, it's about raising this horse and kind of managing its stats and managing the food you're going to put into it and stuff like that, while simultaneously learning about the world that the game takes place in like an indirect kind of way through this, you know, semi-reliable narrator. It's just like very stylish. The way the story is told is just very. It is, you know, it's very stylish. There's not really another word for it.
It's also really drawing. Like the gaming parts are fun because, I mean, it adds this extra element to it. But I was kind of the amount of story you get per sort of page in the game is a lot less during that portion. And I was kind of like a little pulled back at that point because I was like, man, no, bring me more of what's going on, because this is a really neat setting. Like, give me more descriptions of the horse and give me more descriptions of this guy's low life. And
yeah. Yeah, I think they had to make it like you raising the thing and kind of making decisions is important to the kind of payoff to the end. But I agree that there could have been a little bit more of that. And when it comes in, it's really great.
Yes, it does have a good payoff at the end, which we will talk about in the spoiler section.
Indeed.
Is there anything else to talk about the game?
Just before, since this part is for people who have not played it, and lest we seem like we just gush about everything we play, that was a sentence that would precede me saying something bad about this, which I'm not going to do. So, but if you think that we're being too positive, you can imagine that I said something negative. But in real life, I was going to say it's free and it takes about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's super unique. Like, I'm a big fan of, I love my Stanley Parables and my Gone Homes and stuff. I do not like the idea of defining what a game can be or how gamey something is. I think that's real nonsense in a way, and really limiting. And because, there's so, and this is an old dead horse, appropriately enough, but like, I'm a dead horse master. The, this is the podcast of dead horse mastery. But because, we get so many fucking, Assassin's Creed 4, the Pirates of History's Forgottens, and Battlefield 6, the killing of the tank, like all that stuff that happens all the time. Like when something like this comes out and it's really unique and weird, I want people who like regular games to try it. It's such a low investment, and it's what is wrong with people that they have no interest in like another experience? It makes no sense to me. Like you can spend 90% of your time, but like, man, I love watching Adventure Time, and I love having sex, and I love like all these things. I don't need to do it 100% of the time,
What's worse is like these people who are so uptight about games will like find something cool about Stanley Parable and still bitch about it not being a game.
Yeah, it's so like they won't allow themselves to like it. It doesn't fit in with their identity to like it. I can't like this beer. Like, are their friends going to make fun of you? Are you in high school? Like, what are you talking about? Like, it doesn't make any fucking sense. So lest it seem like we're reacting to nothing, like even on, the Something Awful forums, which I think is the most well-cultivated community on the internet, you will find in the Stanley Parable thread and the Gone Home thread a whole lot of shit posting about like, I can recognize this game did this well and made me feel this thing, but it's still not a game. And I think it's really unsuccessful as far as that. Like, you just realize you just said that this like work of art, made you feel like, made you feel sad about a character you didn't know, beforehand that doesn't exist. Like you just felt something that you'd feel for a person for ones and zeros. Marvel at that, you fucking idiot.
I mean, I liked Gone Home a lot. I liked even more how much shit it stirred up.
It was, it was a huge shit stir. Like, kind of thing. It's so dumb. Fucking idiots. Anywho.
So try this too. Yeah, try this. Try out Horsemaster, which, by the way, we haven't said yet. It is available at noncanon.com/horsemaster.html. Also, if you just Google Horsemaster, I think it's about the second result. It's actually popular enough to be found pretty quickly.
Yeah, so. It's the first result. Yep. And I just Googled it. And then Tom McHenry is a funny dude. So follow him on Twitter. It's his name.
Yeah.
TommHenry. He does really great, like really charming comics. After I played this, I started following him, and he does a lot of really good work. So
yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of admin stuff real quick.
Yeah. Yep. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade. You can find us on Twitter at Comrade Podcast.
Yes.
Yep. And then you can find us our website at www.duckfeed.tv/comrade. Those are all the places on the web where you can check us out.
And you can also like us and follow us to help other people find us. And you can give us some ratings and reviews on iTunes to help even more people discover us. And on top of that, we're always open to suggestions via any of those venues. Any way you can reach us through those ways, feel free to tell us about a game you think we would like or want us to check out in some manner, and we will do so.
Yeah, we'll definitely give it all a fair shake. We won't necessarily do an episode on everything, but we're always looking for suggestions.
Agreed.
For things. And to make up for this like flow of positivity for the next two episodes, or last two episodes, we'll do two games we fucking hate next time. It's going to be Assassin's Creed 4 and Battlefield. It's a terrible indie game, but just through the goddamn roof.
As far as I understand it, you would like to do a game that we can bash a little bit. So that might actually be coming up.
I was disappointed in that I would love to talk about because it had a lot of potential. But anywho,
look forward to that.
Yep. And here is a little break, and then we'll be talking about spoilers for Horsemaster, which you should play first.
Yes.
So yeah, so what do we not want to tell people about Horsemaster, Nick?
Well, so the whole situation, which I described the beginning of it, but as you would now know now that you played the game, you raised this crazy, disgusting horse form thing to take it to this competition, which is much like not a horse race as is kind of implied throughout the whole rest of the thing, because you know you're using your preconceived notions of what someone raising a horse is going to be using it for, but you're actually raising it for this sort of dog show competition type deal to treat your character's drug addiction. Like he wants to win at this so badly because he's addicted to this drug and has spent every last dime on a horse so that he can forever have this drug.
Yeah, it's also makes sense with the when you do this interact with these horses in mm-hmm. whatever way, you need to have these like twitch reflexes. Like it's never totally clear like what came first. You know, the horse obsession or the drug addiction, but they are tied to each other in a way that, you know, they will forever be.
Well, I think it's purposely kind of playing off jockeying a little bit, because, you know, they do have to be like these super small guys that are really good at riding horses.
And really good at doing drugs.
And probably really good at doing drugs. Like, I don't deny that. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure there's probably a big drug scene in the jockey universe.
Yeah, I don't know how else they stay so small. Like, yeah. It's more or less gotta be drugs, like stunting.
They've been drinking coffee since like age two.
And swallowing gum. These guys.
So the main spoilery thing is there's multiple endings. Multiple things that can happen at the end of the competition. And I've played twice and only got the same ending both times. But I'll talk about that a little bit. So the last part of the competition is for the horses to be slain, revealing a disc that contains their main nerve system.
Yeah, they have like a nervous, like a disc, like a nervous disc or something like that. You have to cut out the tendons that connect it to the rest of the horse.
And the pattern revealed within that nerve disc is the biggest part of the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And in mine, his star in his nerve system was asymmetrical, which led the character to, I believe, run off in absolute shame. And I don't think it was revealed, but probably die soon after without his drugs and without a dime to his name.
Yeah, a house or anywhere, you know. Or any money. I've played it twice and only had the good ending. So I don't know what decisions I'm making.
Well, I should never become a real horse master is what it's saying.
Yeah, that's probably true. Like
this is your calling, Gary.
If they ever invent these horses, don't try to master one.
I won't. But you should get in. It's going to be lucrative for you.
I would like to own a small horse. Like about the size of my cat. Like just a tiny, tiny horse.
A Shetland?
Like a micro Shetland. the big thing about owning a horse would be the shit. That's the thing I would not like. I think I can handle buying like that much cabbage and hay and stuff, but just like dealing with, you know, their weight and shit every day or whatever it ridiculously is. Like horses are fucking disgusting. Like, they're beautiful animals, but, and I don't know if you spend any time around a horse, but like they also, terrifying genitals on both ends of the spectrum.
It's true. Like, yeah, they are really fucking grotesque on both ends.
Yeah, like girl horses and boy horses are both very troubling from a genital perspective.
Like, oh shit.
They're no good. You know, they're beautiful animals. And you spend all this time. I mean, the emotional gut punch it's going for is it on paper, like just talking about it sounds a little cheap. Like you're spending all this time doing this thing and there's a big twist. Like, oh, I have to kill it. Whenever you have a boy and his dog, you know, the dog's going to die. You know that. But because of the tone and because of, how much the character is building this thing up, it seems so incongruous that because the character, like it's dramatic irony. The character knows what you're going to be doing and the player doesn't.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of most dramatic irony.
Yeah. It's exactly. It's just it's you know that kind of unreliable narrator, you know, to what you're doing. It makes it really interesting, and it's very funny too. Like it's funny and sad. Like the writing is just like cracks. It's like not a wasted word. Really good attention to like kind of relevant detail about the world. So you get a really complete picture right off the bat. Really high recommendation, especially for something you play on your fucking lunch break and still have time to eat.
In your browser, like you don't have to download anything, you don't have to pay for anything. You just load up the page and start playing. It's really good.
Yeah. Play in browser. Don't even play on your lunch break. Play on your regular work.
Yeah.
Like it's just text. Yeah. So super well recommended, and just I guess like at this point you've played it, so the recommendation part doesn't make any sense. However, I really like this game.
Yep. So. I too really like this game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's for Horse Master and for Risk of Rain. So thanks for checking us out, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Absolutely. Take care.